You are listening to the Midcurrent Church Podcast. This week's message is from our series titled, Red Letters, The Timeless Words of Jesus. For more information and to visit us online, check us out at midcurrentchurch.org and find us on Facebook and Instagram. And now, here is Pastor Sten Carlson with today's message.
Hey, good morning once again. How is everybody doing today? We all right? Hey, good. Glad to have you here. Sam said, if I didn't catch you at the beginning too, my name is Sten. I've been MIA for a couple weeks here, but if this is like, you know, you were there then and now I'm here now. I am the pastor around here. I was just away for a week of vacation with my family, which was awesome. Now I'm glad to be back and I'm glad to be picking up the baton in this series called Red Letters. It's been awesome a few weeks to see what's been happening. Pastor Jonathan kicked it off. Sam Yang in week number two. Phil Prince. Just last week, Russ Blake, which if you were here last week, I was mortified to learn that he wore shorts on stage. Did that really happen? Everybody, I thought, my goodness. No, just kidding. I was not worried about that. I was actually a little flattered to have learned that it was my fashion sense that kind of inspired his wardrobe for the whole day. So I thought that was a great thing. Okay, if you're like, what am I talking about? Don't worry. You don't have to worry about any of that. I'm glad to be picking up the baton on this series, Red Letters. The idea is very simple. We're looking at the four Gospels, we call them in the New Testament, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And if you open up your Bible today to any of those books in the Bible, the words that Jesus spoke himself, they jump off the page. They're highlighted with big, bold, red letters. They're, in a way, they're kind of screaming at us, see me, notice me, read me. And so we have just taken this month of July to learn more about some of the things that Jesus had to say. And so I'm excited to dive into more of what it is that Jesus had to say. As we get started here, let me ask you just the question to kick things off. That question is this: how do you convince someone to trust you? Like, do you sign an agreement, or I mean, is it like you go for a handshake, or maybe you go like the pinky swear, pinky promise is the binding sign of your trust with worthiness. Maybe you reveal both hands from behind your back just so nobody, you know, sees, you know, everybody can see you don't have any fingers crossed. Or maybe it's something else that you do to convince someone you're trustworthy, that you're telling the truth. It's fascinating to me the lengths that people will go to validate the promises that they make. Let me give you somewhat of a unique example here. The Carlson family, we happen to be big time fans of the reality TV show Survivor. Anyone else out there? All right, good. I'm not the only kind of geeky one here. Okay, we're huge fans of the show Survivor. If you're unfamiliar with how the show works, here's a very, very quick overview. Castaways are sent to an island, and one castaway is voted off of the island every few days until there's one, you know, castaway left who's crowned the sole survivor. Okay, a big piece of the game is forming alliances and making deals and making promises with other contestants in hopes that, you know, they would never vote you off of the island. And we've watched this show for so long now that we've started to notice a particular trend on the show, that when people make a promise to someone, they always swear on something. We've noticed this. We also used to go, this happens every season. When people are making a promise to someone, they swear on something. I swear on my kids' lives. You know, one year, there was two cops on the show, and they kept asking each other, do you swear on your badge? And I was like, yeah, I swear on my badge. You know, it's like they're trying to convince each other, you can believe me. There would be seasons where, you know, sadly, contestants would have loved ones who had passed away, and so they say, yeah, I swear on their grave, right? It's like you start hearing these things. Sometimes I'm like, I don't even know what that means, but everyone did it, swearing on something to convince someone that they could, you know, really trust them. But here's the crazy part: no one keeps their promise. I mean, kids, badge, grave, husband, like it didn't matter. Nobody keeps their promise. And here's the crazier part. To some degree, every contestant knows it. Like, they all know that nobody's keeping their promise every single time. And so the question that haunts each player, I mean, they talk about it in their little in-game interviews, or if you hear some of them after the game talk about their experience, they all say the very same thing about the moments they sat on the beach, about the moments when they lied there trying to go to bed at night in the middle of the game. There was one question that haunted them, despite what it is that someone else might have said to them in a conversation, the one question that haunts every single castaway, every minute they play the game is, can I trust you? They're constantly making deals, making agreements, making alliances, saying, you and I, hey, yeah, us too, let's pull them in, right? And but they just knew, like, that they had to ask themselves constantly, can I trust you? Now, you may not ever be on Survivor. You might not even like the show, and that's okay, because I'm a big enough fan for all of us here in the room, so there's no problems there. Okay, you might not like the show, you probably will never be on the show, but what you need to know is that every single one of us, we have people in our lives asking us the very same question. Can I trust you? I heard what you said. We were in the same room. We had a heart to heart. I heard what you said. I know the promise that you kind of made to me. I know the assurances that you've given to me, but can I trust you? I think some of us have spouses that are asking, you know, each other, can I trust you? Maybe there's been hurts or confusion or disappointment or miscommunication in the past. Maybe trying to, you know, build things back again or just build things stronger from a certain point on. And one or both spouses are asking, like, can I trust you? Right? Some of you have business partners and colleagues that you work with wondering, like, can I trust you? Right? How is this going to shake out with us? Right? How are we going to move forward together best? Right? You may have clients or customers or potential customers that are asking, can I trust you? Teenagers here in the room, your parents are asking, right? Can I trust you? When you start hanging out over here, when you start driving, or when you start dating, right? Can I trust you? I know what you said. Yeah, mom and dad, that's all good. Your parents are wondering, can I trust you? As Christians, we've got people looking at us. As Jesus followers, we have people looking at us going, can I trust you? Right? Are you the real deal, right? Or are you just talk? Maybe the community around us, or maybe your friends, or maybe your neighbors, or maybe you yourself are looking at Mid-Current Church going, like, can I trust all of you? I'm almost positive that I've got people looking at me as a pastor in the church asking, can I trust you, Sten? I mean, it's actually crazy. There's a recent poll that shows, this is crazy. A recent poll shows that only 27% of Americans consider clergy or pastors to have high levels of trustworthiness. Okay, and that's down 64% from 25 years ago. In 2001. Here's the deal. Every single one of us has someone, or maybe many someones, in our life asking, can I trust you? Can I really believe what it is that you are saying to me? And because of this, I think that every single one of us here, young and old, we should be concerned. We should be looking in the mirror at ourselves, being willing to take a hard look inside of us and asking ourselves how trustworthy we really are, right? The foundation of anything significant that we want to be a part of, the foundation is trust. And so the real question that I think we should be asking is not necessarily a question going like, hey, can I trust you? But I think the real question that we should be asking ourselves is, how well can I be trusted? Right? Ultimately, we got to take matters into our own hands. We got to look at ourselves, into our own heart, into our own life, and our soul. And we got to ask ourselves the question, how well can I be trusted in my family, in my marriage, in my parenting, or my community, or my school, or on my team, or in my company, or in my leadership, or in my church, or somewhere else? To what extent, right? We got to ask ourselves this question, to what extent can people really trust me? And so what I want to do this morning, using God's word and ultimately the teachings of Jesus that show up in the red letters in our Bible, what I want to do this morning is to try to teach us how it is that we essentially make a promise that really means something to the people in our lives that we want to trust us. I want the men and the women of Mid-Current Church to be trustworthy people. And if that's going to happen, what I want us to understand is that the trust that we want to exist between us and people in our lives, it is not it's not built by the size and the grandeur of the promises that we make, but it's really built by something else completely different. And this morning, I want us to try to see what that something is. Ultimately, in his teaching that we see in the red letters, Jesus is, I think he's kind of highlighting what it is that we need to be concerned about most when it comes to our trustworthiness. He's highlighting it in a section of his famous Sermon on the Mount. This particular section, Jesus is addressing a bunch of different areas of life, and he's doing a bunch of topics all in the same way. He's going, hey, you've heard this, but I really tell you this. A bunch of things, a bunch of different places in life. You've heard it said this about this. Well, I'm actually telling you this. And he's trying to get people to understand that for so many important parts of life, there's kind of more than meets the eye, right? That by and large, it's not just the appearance of something on the surface that matters. Ultimately, his point in all these statements is that Jesus, I think he knew that human beings, when it comes to the things that we say, we rely too heavily on big polished speeches or fancy words or big, promises. And so he's kind of warning against this, because the reality is the people standing in the wake of those kind of promises, people everywhere, they make big promises, bold, predictions, and they're saying, hey, you can trust me here, right? But there's people in the wake of those promises left going, is this for real? Are they for real? This all sounds really good, but can I trust you? And so I think what we see, Jesus is saying he's trying to get people to understand, hey, gang, it's not about just the appearance of things on the outside, but rather something else entirely, right? It's the very same idea that runs through each of these teachings. You've heard this, but I'm actually telling you something different. And so here, when he's addressing kind of the promises that we make to people, he begins the very same way. Here's what he says in Matthew chapter 5. He says, again, it's a big long string of these statements, and he's saying, once again, you have heard that it was said to the people long ago, do not break your oath, but fulfill to the Lord the vows you have made. Then here's verse 34. He says, but I tell you, right? This is what we see. You've heard it said this a long time ago, but I'm telling you something different. He says, I tell you, do not even swear an oath at all. Right? That's peculiar in a sense. If you're trying to figure out how you kind of establish trust and get someone to believe you, like, what are you supposed to do? He said, I'm telling you, don't even swear an oath at all. He's saying, don't even bother making promises to people like this in the first place. Okay, don't swear an oath at all. You might be wondering what he's talking about. What don't swear an oath? What does that mean? I think if you really kind of reviewed your own life and conversations, you might realize what he means, even if it doesn't come to your mind right now, because I think every one of us, in a sense, we at some point in our life, we've pleaded our case to someone else, by saying and trying to validate our point, and we've tacked on to the end of our conversation, I swear to God. Or like, I swear on my life, or I swear on earth, or someone told me, hey, I'm from the South, and we used to say, I swear on a stack of Bibles, right? And so maybe you realize what Jesus is getting at more than you think. I don't know when exactly we started kind of bolstering promises with these extra qualifiers, but apparently the very same thing had been happening in Jesus's day. So he says, I'm telling you, don't swear an oath at all. And then he gives some examples. He says, don't swear an oath by heaven, for it's God's throne, or by earth, for it's his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it's the city of the great king. Verse 36, it kind of takes an interesting turn here. He says, and do not swear by your head, for you cannot make even one hair white or black. I mean, that's an interesting kind of tag on, but I kind of like that one. I think it's his way of saying, don't you see how silly all of this is? Really is, right? Essentially, he's saying, hey, big words and big, you know, they don't make your promise any more true, any more believable. In fact, what he's introducing here specifically is the idea that significant sounding promises very well mean, at least at this time, it very well mean that your promise is actually all the less true. You see, in Jesus' day, in this time, the law of the Old Testament, it allowed for people to swear by the name of God in order to like substantiate an important promise that you were making to someone. And the law then demanded that a person stay true to any oath that was sworn like that. You know, and so the keepers of the law, they kind of paid attention to this stuff, and they even created like a little hierarchy of the types of oaths that people would make. And that's ultimately where things start to get a little hairy, because in Jesus' day, some people tried to say that, you know, that this Old Testament law, it meant that only a promise made in God's name was a binding promise. Trying to say that's the only one. And in doing so, that they had created a little loophole. And so if a person wasn't necessarily all that serious about a promise that they had made or didn't intend to keep it, they would swear by some kind of less sacred thing than God's name. And Jesus is kind of referencing them here. You know, if they wanted to, you know, sound convincing but really kind of give themselves a way to back out of it, they'd swear by heaven. Or they'd swear by earth, or they'd swear by Jerusalem, right? It sounds good. It sounded pretty significant. It sounded like something like, well, hey, we can trust them on that. But they're the loophole, right? But they'd go, well, hey, since I didn't swear by God, they'd argue that maybe the promises weren't binding, and they didn't have to be held to it in the end. Right? And so what we see is that these big words were just kind of like a smokescreen to promise that someone wasn't necessarily sure they were going to keep or not. And so that was the loophole that some kind of used and that Jesus is alluding to here. He's saying, so hey, don't go around like, you know, throwing smoke screens on promises that you might not be able to keep. Right? His point is that like, These big words and these fancy promises, they just don't make your promises any more true. They don't make what you have to say any more believable. In fact, it might just be the opposite, but he's warning here either way. And instead, here is what he says, and he gives us the answer for, I think, how it is we start to build trust with people in our lives. Verse 37, he says, all you need. Okay? It's not the big words and the fancy sounding promises that you make to someone. He says, all you need to say is simply yes or no. He adds on to that by saying, anything beyond this comes from the evil one. See, I think that Jesus understands the duplicity or like the deceptivity of the human heart and the reality that sometimes people like that they would draw on this these kinds of oaths in order to conceal and attempt to deceive. By contrast, Jesus's disciples, he's trying to help them understand, Jesus's disciples were to be people of such integrity, of such character, that whatever they would say, simply just because of the lives that they lived, that whatever they say would be absolutely believable and dependable and trustworthy, right? That a yes would mean yes, and that a no would mean no. And when that is all you say, in the course of conversations where you're building trust with people, right? When that is all that you say, when that's all that you give someone to go off of, when there's nothing more added to it, when there's nothing extra or no qualifier that you've tacked onto it, then the only way, listen to this, the only way to substantiate the promise that you are making or the words that you are speaking is with the life that you have been living. And so when you consider all of this, here's what I think we have to understand about what Jesus is suggesting about trustworthiness in our lives. When you put it all together, I think we start to see that trustworthiness, it is simply a demonstration of your declaration, right? The thing that you are announcing to anyone, right? It's not the presentation of that thing that you would like people to believe. It's not the, you know, a fancy presentation of any kind of declaration that you would like people to believe is true, right? It's a demonstration of that very declaration that you would like people to believe in your life, right? Trustworthiness is not the words that you say. It's when your whole life's like resume, your whole life's body of work would substantiate the things that you say. And this is what Jesus is ultimately getting at. He's showing that he's not necessarily concerned with the words that you say, the words that you speak, but more so with the life that you live day in and day out. Okay, it's not what you say. Okay, it's about how you live, right? It was never about just the words that you say, which is helpful. You know, as I think back on my own life, I grew up kind of knowing in a way that I wasn't supposed to say, I swear to God, right? I just kind of like grew like, all right, not supposed to say those things like it was some kind of naughty word. But I don't think that's what Jesus is ultimately getting at. It wasn't a matter of like profanity, but it was a matter of believability. What he's alluding to is the fact that it's the life that you're living that makes the words that you're speaking believable, right? Why? Because trustworthiness, the trust that we build with important people in our life, Jesus wants his followers to understand, it ultimately comes down to a daily demonstration of any kind of declaration that we might want to make. In some way, as I think about this, it makes me think of what is said, just as maybe a helpful reference or point of context. It somehow makes me think of what's said about like parenting and raising children. I've heard it so many times, and I'm almost sure you have too, that when it comes to the things we want our kids to learn, right, that all those things are caught, not taught. Right? All the important things that we want kids to, right? It's not about the things that we say. It's not about the things that we have taught them. It's about all the things that they have just observed, right? It's all the things we want them to learn. They're caught in our everyday living and our everyday actions and our everyday decision making, right? Rather than the things that we have just taught them with the words that we speak. And the very same thing, I think, is true when it comes to every important relationship in our life. When it comes to the people that we're trying to build trust with, right? It's not the things that we say over and over and over again that move the dial or that make the difference. It's not the promises that we just made again and again and the assurances that we gave with you know, real kind of, you know, enthusiasm behind it, right? It's not just the words that people hear us say over and over again that turns the dial. It's what people see. And it's what people experience from us, what they have observed in us day in and day out that makes the things that we say, that makes a yes be a yes, and that makes a no be a no, right? It's a yet again another case where there really is more than meets the eye, right? There's more to the conversation than just what is on the surface. Remember, I'm trying to put this all in context. This whole conversation that Jesus is getting at, it comes up in this long list of things. You've heard this, but I'm telling you this, right? He's going, hey, but you've heard it said, don't murder. He goes on a little bit before this. I'm saying, don't even be angry with someone. Don't let, you know, hate linger in your heart. He says, you've heard it said, don't commit adultery. I'm telling you, don't even look at another woman or another man with curiosity or with lust in your heart. Right, so, you know, he's trying to help people go. If you're going like, well, hey, I didn't kill anybody. I didn't like cheat on anybody. Jesus is trying to kind of make the point like, well, good for you, but it's not always just about how things appear on the surface. And so here Jesus is saying, you've heard it said, don't break your promise. I'm telling you, be careful. I'm telling you, don't even necessarily concern yourself with making big promises in the first place. And so when it comes to the promises that we make or the words that we want to speak to others, what we can conclude from this, that Jesus is saying that, hey, ultimately, here's what we got to know. It's a person who lives a dependable and an honorable life that is going to speak dependable and honorable words, right? Yeses will be a yes and nos will be a no. Simple as that. That's the goal, that we would live our lives in such a way that people would only need to hear a yes or a no from us, and they would know what to expect. Because ultimately what I want us to understand here is that it is the consistency of our character, how we show up in everyday life, how we show up in the big moments and in the little moments, right? It is ultimately the consistency of our character that's what validates the content of the conversations that we have with people in our life. It's not the big promises that we make. It's the consistency of everyday life and faithfulness and integrity that validates the content of any conversation we have with people in our life that we want to believe what it is that we are saying. Right? Convincing someone in our life of something that we want them to believe, it is never about the size or the repetitiveness of the promises that we make, but about the consistency of the lives that we are living. It is a demonstration with our everyday lives and our everyday actions and choices and behaviors, right? It is a demonstration of the kind of declaration that we feel compelled to make in our conversation with others. And so the best way, if the question of the day is, man, how well can I be trusted, right? The best way to make any promise to anyone that's worth trusting, to your boss or to your parents or to your spouse or to your coworker or to your students or whatever, the best way to make a promise that is worth trusting is to let your life do the talking, to spend a whole life building and curating, right? Curating a life that would do the talking for you. This seems to be important to Jesus 2,000 years ago, and I can't think of anything more important for us to be thinking about our own life today. I can't help but think the very same thing is true, that we need to spend our time thinking about the very same thing and how the life that we live makes the words that we speak believable. And so if this is the case, I want to just ask a few questions to get you thinking about this, right? If it is not necessarily just about the words that we're saying, but about the life that we are living, then the questions I want to ask you to consider today and as you go from here is, like, what kind of life are you living? Like, when it comes to the consistency of the character and the integrity with which you show up into everyday moments of life, the big moments and the small moments, right? What kind of life are you living? What kind of choices are you making, especially when no one's looking? Right? How do you, respond when a timely and convenient loophole opens up in front of you? What decisions are you really making when no one is there looking over your shoulder? No one's there to really hold you accountable, right? What is people's experience with you? If it's not about what people hear from us, but what they just experience from us, right? What is people's experience with you on a regular basis, or how do you demonstrate, or maybe more importantly, what areas of your life right now do you need to be most concerned about demonstrating to people that you mean what you say? I think it's the sum of all of these kind of moments and so many others too that are worth exploring in our life, but I think it's the sum of all of these moments that ultimately lead to a life that's worth believing. And I'm telling you, friends, I think there are some people in our lives right now who need to know, because they're asking the question, but they need to know that we can be trusted. And it's not the size. It's not the, you know, the strength or the grandeur or the magnitude of the words that we speak, but it is the consistency of the life that we live, the integrity with which we show up every day. It is the consistency of our character in these everyday moments of life that will validate the content of the important conversations that we have with people around us every day. It is the best way. If this is the question that we're asking ourselves, how well can I be trusted? I think that this is the best way we can answer that very question. Before I close, as I think about these questions, can I be trusted, and what questions are rolling around in our head, I can't help but think that the bigger question for maybe some of you here today, it might not be the question, can I be trusted? I recognize that for some of you here today, if you're honest, the bigger question that you are asking right now at this stage in your life, or maybe your journey of faith, the bigger question might be, can God be trusted? Right? Can I believe that He is who He says He is, that He'll do what He'll, you know, that he, what He said that He'll do, or that He loves me like He says He does, or that other people tell me, all right, that He really is for me, or that He has a great future in store for me? That might be the biggest question that some of you are asking today. Can God really be trusted? And if that's you, I would encourage you to look or to consider not only at what God said, but what God did. Right? John chapter 3, verse 16 reminds us that God loved the world, that God loved you and me so much that He sent His one and only Son to this earth for us. He could have shouted His love for us from heaven, right? He could have sent, you know, some more stone tablets from heaven to earth in order to communicate to us His great love for us. But He didn't do that. He didn't shout it. He didn't send a stone tablet down to this earth. He sent His Son Jesus, right? He could have, if He wanted to, He could have made a giant declaration of His love for us. He could have, you know, written it in the clouds that would have been amazing for everybody to see. But He didn't do that. Instead, what we got was a big giant demonstration of His love for us right here on earth. Romans chapter 5, verse 8 says to us, but God what? Demonstrates. Could have just made a giant heavenly declaration, but He doesn't do that. He made a giant demonstration. But God demonstrates His own love for us in this, that while we were still sinners, Christ came to this earth and died for us. Right? I can't help but feel like someone here needs to know that Christ died for you, and that you can trust Him with your life, and that you can take Him at His word. And at the end of the day, I'm actually just praying that the same would be true for every one of us here, that because of the lives that we live, we too can be taken at our word in some of the relationships that matter most in our life. It is to be, Jesus is teaching, it is to be a defining mark of the lives of those who follow Jesus. And so I hope that a life well lived is ultimately the only validation that someone would need to put their trust in any one of us. That kind of trust could go a very long way in some of the most important places and relationships in our life. Let me pray for us. God, we have to start off just by recognizing kind of where I left off here. That You are the best, the ultimate, the most supreme example of trustworthiness, God. that you didn't just make a fancy presentation, or it wasn't just some kind of declaration that you made from a far off land of your love for us, God, but you made a tangible demonstration of your love for us by sending your son to this earth for us, God. And it is the reminder that we can trust you, that we can take you and your son, Jesus, at your word, that we can put our hope and our faith and our trust in you. And God, I'm just praying that the same could be said of each of us, that in the important places in our life, God, and the relationships that matter and the conversations that we're going about in the course of our daily life, God, that people would see in us and an experience from us a reality that they can trust us and they can take us at our word. God, and I pray that is the thing that would help us to point more and more people to you and to your great love for us and for them. And we pray all these things in the name of your son, Jesus. Amen.
Thank you for listening to this week's message from Midcurrent Church. For more information and to visit us online, check out midcurrentchurch.org and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Be sure to join us on Sunday mornings, both online and in person at 9 and 10:30 a.m. Midcurrent is located at 200 First Street in downtown Hudson, Wisconsin.